Here's what's going to happen. I am going to have to fix you, manage you to on a more personal scale, a more micro form of management. Jim, what is that called?
Microgerment.
Boom. Yes. Now, Jim is going to be the client. Dwight, you're going to have to sell to him without being aggressive, hostile, or difficult.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, episode 2 of the week. Our Cowboys preview, Monday Night Football. We have RJ Ochoa with us to help us preview the matchup. RJ's editor-in-chief of Blogging the Boys over at SB Nation. RJ, thanks for joining us.
Of course. Great to be with you guys. I made sure, I don't know where your baseball allegiances lie, but I made sure to represent my Houston Astros just because I assumed it was
Weiss,
the wrong side.
Yeah, Weiss is going to take more issue than that than myself. I'm a Mets fan, so.
That's the first thing I saw when he turned his camera on was that Altuve jersey, and I just threw up in my mouth.
Yeah. It was just for you guys, but Astros-Mets World Series will be great.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And then when the Mets sign Judge in free agency, it'll be a party. So,
all right. This show is over. I'm out of here. This show is over.
No, it's all right. It's all right. We'll keep you here. We'll actually talk some football. So we were just musing real quick before we hit the record button that this is the first Giants Cowboys game in some time that has a little bit of juice. RJ may disagree at the level of juice that this game has, but in our eyes, listen, Giants can move to 3-0 in a year in which many projected them to start 0-3. It's Daniel Jones versus Cooper Rush. It's, you know, pay for the full seat. All you need is the edge. And let's get it going. What's your juice level for this primetime game?
So I don't envy Giants fans, but like, this is a really fun season. I think if you're a Giants fan, right? Like, especially like if you're a Mets or a Yankees fan, like this is an awesome fall. Like the season's turning, like it's getting darker earlier. Like everything is kind of coming up the way a classic sports season feels. And you're right. Like, I think you're already playing with house money if you're a Giants fan. Oh, like definitely. Nobody expected this. So it's a welcome to Cowboys to town. Monday Night Football. Troy is going to be on the call. He's going to have to call the Giants beating them, blah, blah. If Dak were here, I'd feel a little bit, you know, different. Obviously it's difficult to kind of feel like there's any juice for the Cowboys with Cooper Rush, your quarterback. Obviously last week, you know, there was kind of like the discovery of some juice. Like, you put on the pants he hadn't worn in a while. There's like a $20 bill in there. Like, oh, wow. Hey. but you know, they're favored. I mean, right. The Giants, I can't remember the last time the New York Giants were favored against the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, depending on where you look. Right. And so that's exciting. I miss these days. You know, when I was in high school, it was the Romo Eli days. You know, I spent a lot of time upset and stressed about playing the New York Giants, and it just really hasn't been that way. And so, it's a bummer. I don't know that I believe in the Giants long-term, to be straight up with you guys, as far as this season, like being a contender. But the darkest part of the night is clearly over. Like this organization is clearly headed the right direction. Just because you're not a playoff team this year doesn't mean that that's not true. So in that sense, yeah, there's some, it's, you know, it's a juice that my 10-month-old son drinks. It's a little baby juice, but it's not like a big, right. You know, massive Gatorade type one.
Right. Exactly. It matters. In previous years, these games haven't mattered to us outside of rivalry purposes. Now they matter. But yeah, you're right. It is house money. The listeners are probably exhausted of me saying this line over and over, but it comes up every episode and every time we have a guest on. But you said it perfectly. It's house money. Zero expectations coming into this season outside of let's see what Dable and his coaching staff are capable of. So far, it's just been fantastic. It's been such a pleasure. You're no stranger to bad coaching, especially right now. we'll get into Mike McCarthy. But for the Giants, with Dave Gettleman the last few years, it's going into every game, they're going to be at a talent disadvantage. And if they're able to pull out the win, it is going to be because they have a massive coaching advantage. We saw that in week one. We saw that last week, Dable versus Matt Rhule. I mean, no question there. And I believe, and we can talk about the coaching matchup, that going up against Mike McCarthy, once again, the Giants have the coaching advantage, but are at a talent disadvantage. Would you agree with that?
I wouldn't. Really? I'm not like the biggest McCarthy guy by any stretch, but I mean, the dude just, I don't believe in Zach Taylor, to be clear, but the dude just made some lemonade. I mean, you know, last week, I think McCarthy gets all of the arrows and none of the sunshine when it comes to the Cowboys. That's just kind of the gig. I think it was a little bit more fair when it came to Jason Garrett, but the Cowboys would have lost that game with Jason Garrett. I mean, they would have lost last year's game in Minnesota. In fact, I tweeted this after the win on Sunday. You know, people wanted to give Garrett credit for his interim year in 2010, but if you focus on just the time that he was the full, you know, full-time head coach, in games without Tony Romo or Dak Prescott, Jason Garrett went 1-13 as the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. And Mike McCarthy already is 5-7 as the head coach, or excuse me, 5-8, no, 6-7 as the head coach of the Cowboys without Dak Prescott. So, I mean, he is, you know, he doesn't cave. He doesn't fall apart. I think that's, we saw that in Green Bay. I mean, I think that's commendable. We've seen, you know, Packers teams make the playoffs, obviously, without Aaron Rodgers under Mike McCarthy. I think Mike is a meme. And I think people tend to just like, oh, Mike sucks. Mike can't manage the clock. Mike doesn't know how to do this, whatever. I'm not, again, here to tell you he's an elite head coach, but I do think he's a little underrated in that sense. I think he probably gets the least amount of validation and credit for a coach who's won the Super Bowl. Rather, we look at, I'm not trying to hate on anybody else, but Doug Peterson in Jacksonville, whoa, watch out, guy won a Super Bowl. Like, Mike did the same thing. And so I think he is, I don't think, you know, I tweeted the other day asking my followers to rank the Cowboys coordinators and Mike McCarthy, like who's doing the best job or the worst job. I would say Dan Quinn's doing the best job of the four of them right now. And I would say Mike's doing the second best job. I wish he was doing the best job, obviously, but Kellen Moore is the dude who I think you are describing, but Mike McCarthy kind of takes the fall for. Kellen is truly Jason Garrett reincarnated.
Wow. So when you look at the Cowboys, right, you look at their roster, obviously with Dak Prescott out, but what do you, and I'm sort of teeing you off on this, but what do you think is their, because when I looked at Dallas coming into last season, I saw a team that was going to be playing in the division round, lock. Like they were going to win a playoff game. They were going to be there, one of the final teams remaining. Obviously that didn't happen. I thought their offseason was very questionable. A lot of questionable decisions, a lot of moves that they made really didn't make sense. I don't even think that they took a step forward. I think they really took maybe a couple steps back. What do you think their main issue is? And again, I'm sort of teeing you off on this to let you go. But what has been the problem with the Cowboys? Because you look at it, right? They hit the lottery with Dak Prescott in 2016. I mean, you want to talk about, you know, becoming a millionaire, buying a lottery ticket? The Cowboys did that. And they did it. It was such a unique thing because it wasn't like they drafted Dak Prescott in the fourth round and by year two, he was a starting quarterback. No, the moment he stepped on the field, he belonged. And then obviously with the Zeke pick and you had the sort of run with that dominating offensive line, you looked at that and you said, okay, there's a championship there. But now that's sort of, I'm not saying the window is fading because Dak is still a young quarterback, but you sort of see them having to retool around Dak. What has gone wrong and why aren't the Cowboys part of that elite group?
I think it's some combination of arrogance and ignorance. I mean, even the Dak thing, right?
It's very poetic.
Yeah, like he's a fourth round pick. So like by nature, not the plan, right? Like to be your franchise quarterback. It's been well discussed, probably by you guys too. They wanted Paxton Lynch in the first round. They wanted to trade back up. That didn't work. And obviously, thankfully, it didn't. They wanted Connor Cook in the fourth round. They tried to trade up and they weren't able to do that. So they had to settle for Dak Prescott. He was their third, you know, choice as far as just prospects were concerned. That year, he started off campus as QB4. QB3 was Jamil Showers, who they later converted to safety, just to kind of give you an indication again at how low they thought of Dak Prescott early on. And this was, by the way, coming off of the 2015 season where they went 1-11 without Tony Romo. So not a real lesson learned. Again, the arrogance, ignorance combination thing. And their backup quarterback was Kellen Moore. And so he actually was hurt first. He broke his ankle during camp and they did nothing. They did nothing to fix that, right? Like despite, again, the fact that Romo himself had missed 12 games the year before, his right. primary backup breaks his ankle. Hey, we'll be fine. We'll be cool. We got this. We got Jamil Showers and Dak Prescott. Sure enough, obviously Romo gets hurt. And to your point, they hit the lottery. Like, you know, if you guys owed a debt or whatever, if you had a mortgage to pay, imagine telling like the lender, like, oh, like we're straight. Like I got a lotto ticket. Like we'll be fine. You'll get your money. Like we're good. Like that's what they do. And that's what they did this offseason, right? Like they At tackle, Tyron Smith entering this year had missed time in six straight seasons. What'd they do? They cut Lyle Collins. Fine. Okay. You want to move on from Lyle, but do something about it. They didn't. They drafted Matt Wiletzko with the fifth round pick they got from Amari Cooper. And they counted on Josh Ball taking a step. Those are their two swing tackle options. Neither of them are in any conversations now. They've been so bad throughout camp of the preseason. But they counted again on hitting the lotto. They traded away Amari Cooper. Fine. You hated him, whatever it was, didn't get vaccinated, whatever, water under the bridge at this point in time. What are you going to do about it? You're going to sign James Washington? That's kind of questionable, but okay, you did something. He got hurt like 2 days into camp. What'd they do? Nothing. We got third round rookie Jalen Tolbert. He's going to be awesome. He's going to be fine. Y'all are freaking out for nothing. He's been inactive the first two games. So like, what's the, you know, you can't like,
I believe with Tolbert, he sort of like lost his role behind the undrafted rookie that they just cut, right?
So he was unable to make it onto the game day roster, and Dennis Houston, who was an undrafted free agent, did. And the Cowboys said, well, you know what? We might have put a little bit too much on Tolbert's plate right away. Yeah, I wonder why. Probably because he didn't have anybody else like to put, you know, anything on their plates. And so they did re-sign Dennis Houston to the practice squad, so he is still part of their team. They have some procedural things they have to do now. Obviously, everybody does with injuries and things like that. But so it's again like this arrogance, ignorance, like we'll be fine, we'll figure it out. Dak will make somebody amazing. That's just the way we roll. Everything they've done great, I would argue, over the last, I don't know, quarter century has been a lottery hit. You mentioned Dak, Romo, I mean, bigger lottery hit, an undrafted free agent. And even Micah. Micah is like their story right now. And, you know, I love Micah Parsons. Obviously, I would not undo that pick. But his evaluation was as an off-ball linebacker. And spending – they drafted him 12th, but they held the 10th overall pick. Spending the 10th or 12th pick in the NFL draft on an off-ball linebacker is a huge misusage of a resource that valuable. You shouldn't do that. I mean, again, he wound up not being that. He wound up being amazing, but that was not the evaluation. They tripped into his amazingness. So I think that's their error. They thought we'll be fine. I mean, you know, we've relitigated this several times, but they had 1,000 takeaways last year. Trayvon Diggs had 11 interceptions. There's 100 literal years of data to prove that regression comes, right? You're not going to do that again. And to their credit, they have found ways to still be productive without the takeaways. But they had 6 takeaways through the first two games of the season last year. They have 2 through the first two games of the season this year. And so they counted on being the exception. We'll be the one. We'll be the one out of a million. That was their plan. That was the error. And all of those things really showed themselves in the season opener before Dak Prescott got hurt, which is why last week was just so terrible.
Yeah, and I'll even throw one more out there. I'm a huge CeeDee Lamb fan. I was a huge CeeDee Lamb fan and for the years I've been saying it's absolutely criminal that the NFL just let him fall to you guys. Just like, I think watching him in college was a treat, and as an avid fantasy football player, like a guy that I'm always looking to get just because I love him so much. And again, you guys just, you had Amari Cooper and then boom, you wind up with CeeDee Lamb.
And Michael Gallup, he's kind of the underrated man.
True. We'll see. Very underrated. Yeah.
We'll see if he makes his debut on Monday night. But even that was, I love CD too. But, you know, and this was a little bit more measured and a little bit more practical. But it was, well, CD will take a leap in week one. We'll trade away Amari. CD will become an alpha, even though we hadn't seen it, which I think is, you know, was a little bit concerning. There was some fair conversation that happened a year ago, and some of that's usage and some of that's Kellen Moore. But they've made a lot of bets. That's why I would say they've spread themselves so thin. And so they, and it's not just like, well, they need some of these to hit. They need them all to hit. They need them all to hit and be functional.
A lot of blind optimism, right?
Yeah. And I think that they rested on the idea. I mean, like, look, I'm not trying to take shots, but y'all know the Giants have been awful for a long time, right?
Dog shit.
Washington has been awful. And so like they counted on that. They counted on like, hey, we've got the best quarterback of the division. We'll just cakewalk through this thing. Like, why try when we can win this thing, you know, sleepwalking, which is what they thought they could do. And I mean, Philly has kind of proven that to be a little bit more difficult so far this season.
I want to ask you about Micah Parsons real quick. And I think he's sort of tied to the Giants in a sense that if you look back at that draft, I believe the Giants picking 11th. And, you know, there was talk of, you know, the two corners coming out, J.C. Horn and Patrick Surtain. And there was talk of Donovan Smith. I'm drawing blanks.
Devontae Smith.
Smith.
Sorry. That the Eagles jumped the Giants because they thought, and they traded with the Cowboys. It was that back-to-back-to-back NFC East run there.
Yeah. And then, you know, the Giants traded back, which I thought was a really, really good trade back because they got that additional first of a team that wasn't going to be good, into the Chicago Bears. And people talk about, well, we should have taken Micah, forget the trade back. And I get that because I think Micah Parsons is a game-changing defensive player. It's probably the best defensive player in the league right now, him and Aaron Donald. But hypothetically speaking, do you think if, let's say, the Giants had taken Micah Parsons, obviously the next phone call the Bears are making is to the Dallas Cowboys. Do you think Dallas is that type of front office that would take that sort of trade and move back? Or was it like, no, there was another guy there that Dallas really wanted?
No, I think that's a really fun butterfly effect. I think they take Rashawn Slater. It was Micah or Slater. And then, look, again, Micah's awesome. I wouldn't undo that. But you can make an argument that that pick made more sense, that they would be more sound right now. They took a risk. And this is the one out of 100 multiverses where it makes sense because Micah has become this freak. But they probably take Rashawn Slater and they're not as trapped when Tyron gets hurt. And, you know, I don't know what they do this year, but they don't take Tyler Smith. So that does have a big impact on their future. If you rewind to that point.
Yeah. I want to ask about Dak Prescott, because again, as someone, I'm not religiously watching Cowboys games unless they're playing the Giants or they're in prime time. But for me, noticeably since the ankle injury, I feel like Dak has been far less willing to take off and run. Is that just something that I've noticed? That's not necessarily true. Is it true? And something that Cowboys fans talk about, but you know, you're even looking at Russell Wilson this year, a guy who's aged and isn't as mobile. I'm starting to notice that a bit more with certain quarterbacks. But for me, since the ankle injury, I feel like he has been less mobile when things break down.
I think that felt true early on last season when he was first coming back, but it slowly faded. I think he's just been bad been not great as a passer. I mean, and the break point is his calf injury that he suffered in the win against, that wasn't prime time, but I'm sure y'all watched that game against New England.
Yeah.
And so after that, I mean, he missed the Vikings game. Well, actually went on bye. He missed the Vikings game. Cooper won that game as well. And the Cowboys were awesome over the second half of last season, but he was not great. I mean, it's been since that New England game, since we've seen kind of elite Dak Prescott play. And obviously, you know, week one was really bad. And a lot of that's out of Dak's control, right? Like, well, here's CeeDee Lamb and three dudes, you know what I mean? Like, good luck, you know? And so it's hard to evaluate him in that sense. And obviously now, like, he's got the thumb thing. And so like, what's he going to look like coming back? But there were some design Dak runs in week one. So I don't think that, you know, they're afraid of that in any sense. They want to run the football, that they understand that Dak helps them in that sense. But I mean, it's just, I don't think he's injury prone, but it's just been this unfortunate thing after unfortunate thing. And that's kind of complicated. They've never really been able to pick up momentum and just like sail through a plan without something disrupting it along the way.
I mean, when we talk about the Cowboys, you always talk about running the football and the dominant offensive lines. Their running game right now, is it like, obviously Ezekiel Elliott's still a big part of it, but why? It just seems like Tony Pollard, I'm not going to say is the better back, but just sort of has more of those plays where you're like, you know what? Maybe he should be playing more than he is. Is that something that Cowboy fans want too?
I mean, you're preaching to the choir, you know, like.
Round running back gang right here.
Right. Top five running back game, but this is only top four running back game. I can't imagine spending the second overall pick. I mean, that's true poverty franchise stuff.
We've been to the ground. Don't worry.
But I mean, Zeke is their guy. Like, and I do think it's worth just talking about. This is an ownership group who has made their fortune, or their football fortune at least, off of a team that was incredibly successful at running the ball, right? Like, the Joneses' highest level of success came behind the NFL's all-time leading rusher and this massive, you know, the Great Wall of Dallas. And so like in their heads, right, they're like, let's play the hits. Like, that's what works, right? Let's go play Hotel California on stage, right? Like, nobody wants to hear the new stuff. And so, I mean, I think that's part of it. I think that, you know, people act like I think by the time Saquon was taken, I think football conventional wisdom was hip to the idea that running the football was stupid and running backs don't matter.
Well,
that
wasn't everyone except for Dave Gettleman.
Right, right. But that wasn't as vogue even just 2 years before. That wasn't as, at least in my estimation, I'm not defending the pick by any means. I mean, they had Jalen Ramsey right there and they passed on him. But it was a little bit like we've learned a lot in just even the last 6 years. And so, but they double down on it, right? Like it's one thing to do it, and it's another thing to like hand him the $90 million. Right. Yeah, exactly. He's their guy. I mean, like you can make an argument that's difficult to refute that they care more about making money and selling shirts and all this stuff than they do about winning. Because yeah, I mean, Tony Pollard is the more explosive runner. He's the more dynamic runner. There's no question. I mean, and they have used him more over the first two games of the season, but it's the final year of his contract. So it's kind of like, well, dude, like you just let this dude like wither away for 3 years. And that's where I go back to Kellen. People love to say, well, the Cowboys don't even use Tony Pollard, blah, 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 this and that, whatever. He's been on, this is his fourth season. And this is Kellen Moore's fourth season as the offensive coordinator. We've seen different head coaches in that time, Jason Garrett and Mike McCarthy. We've seen different quarterbacks, obviously with Dak Prescott getting hurt. We've seen different offensive line combinations. The one common denominator is Kellen Moore. And so like they tell us that, yeah, we're going to do 21 personnel. We're going to put Tony Pollard in the slot. Okay. Like why is this dude not getting like 100 targets a game? He's so fast. We saw what he did against Cincinnati. Do that all the time. They just want to do it their way.
I want to ask you about Kellen Moore for a second, because the Giants can sort of relate to this. When Joe Judge, obviously the Cowboys have been more successful, but when the Giants hired Joe Judge, they hired Jason Garrett as the offensive coordinator. And immediately everybody knew that was a John Mara hire. John Mara is a big fan of Jason Garrett. Obviously, he's a part of that sort of inner circle. You know, the Maras have a profound respect for Jason Garrett. And it took a while, but then Jason Garrett couldn't last 2 years. He was gone by the middle of the second season. Kellen Moore, obviously, it's clear that this is a Jerry Jones, Dallas Cowboys front office. Hey, Mike McCarthy, we're hiring you, but we want this guy to be our offensive coordinator. Mike McCarthy agrees. Mike McCarthy is also a play caller. I've seen McCarthy make some comments about Kellen Moore and the play calling. Do you see a scenario where Mike McCarthy says, hey, I'm on the hot seat, let me call plays, you just help me with something else?
I mean, he should. I mean,
will ownership allow him? Like, is that an ownership thing?
I think so. I mean, I think, you know, Mike has challenged the Joneses in ways that Jason never did. And you can argue, I mean, some of that goes back to, again, like the way you learn, like Jason met the Joneses when he was like 23 years old. You know what I mean? Like, it's difficult to stand up to somebody who you've known for like that long in your life or whatever. Again, I don't want to intimate that Jason Garrett's not capable of standing up for himself, but Mike can walk and talk with a little bit more bravado. I mean, he's won a Super Bowl in their building, right? Like, you know, he's got something that they don't, he can rub it in their face. He's been their kryptonite in a lot of senses. And so I certainly think he could. I think that he really believes this is what's best. And I disagree with that assertion. I think, you know, I don't know that I believe that there's an elite play caller lurking in the current version of Mike McCarthy, but if he doesn't return for a fourth season, and if we just went 3 years with this dude who made his money in the NFL off of his offensive wizardry, and we never let him call the offense, like, what was the point? You know, like, why did you bring him in to never let him do the thing that helped him be great in the NFL? And I mean, obviously it is kind of a desperate move. We saw that with him in Green Bay, right? Like near the end, right? Like and that is a classic kind of trope, like a coach who's on the hot seat. I would love if he did that. If I'm out on anybody, I mean, I'm close to being out on Mike, but I'm out on Kellen Moore. It's been too long. There are so few offensive coordinators in the NFL who make it to a fourth season with a team, because either by then they've been poached to be a head coach somewhere, or they've been fired. And so I think we wrote about this over the offseason. I think since 2008, I want to say 15 offensive coordinators have made it to a fourth year with a team. Eric Bieniemy is one of them. That's obviously a different situation. But one of them is Scott Linehan, Kellen's predecessor in Dallas. And so and the fourth year went terribly for them. And I think Kellen is he's not a homegrown player. It's not like he's not like Jason Garrett, because Jason's father was a scout for the Cowboys. There was a longer lineage there. Obviously, he had the relationship with the Giants as well. But Jerry so badly wants to find, people say he's Sean McVay, but like I equate him, I don't know if you guys are soccer fans, but like he so badly wants what, like, you know, English soccer clubs try to do with like, you know, legends of the club to bring in and be their manager. And like I'm a Manchester United fan, like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, like was like this dude who had this amazing goal for us, this amazing season. Now he's like, everything is perfect. It's just like nostalgia. It's like, you know, it's like right now, like the Nintendo Switch people releasing like the original Super Smash Brothers on whatever their platform is, that you can like, well, we'll just play this game forever. Why ever change anything? We'll just play the same thing and do the same thing over and over again. And so I think that clouds their judgment. But I certainly think that Mike would take over play calling if he wanted to. I just don't think he does.
What was the plan? was the plan when Kellen Moore was hired as the offensive coordinator to eventually take over as head coach?
It's hard to feel like that wasn't. I mean, right. You know, and his path, you know, has been very similar to Jason Garrett's. It's funny. It's comical how funny their path was. I mean, they both were backup quarterbacks who weren't very good. They both were number 17. You know what I mean? They both immediately went into the coaching profession. And they both, in terms of the roles that they, at least Kellen currently occupies, they both were hired to be offensive coordinators before the head coach that they worked for the majority of their careers. Jason obviously hired before Wade Phillips in 2007. And then Kellen Moore was promoted to offensive coordinator for Jason Garrett's last season and then retained actually that was his second season. So Jason Garrett's last season was Kellen Moore's first season, and he was retained in Mike McCarthy's era, which, you know, it's kind of like, why not? Like, and that's the problem. Like, you can make an argument that the Cowboys have been stuck with some version of Jason Garrett since 2007, since they hired him, they've had some impact, some branch of his tree. And that's why, you know, if they do move on from McCarthy in the offseason, Sean Payton's awesome, but like, that's, you're just doing the same thing. Like, you're just bringing in.
Do you think Sean Payton would accept that? Do you think he would say, like, I'll let you put my coaching staff together?
I don't, which in one way, in some respect, I would love. He would be the most Bill Parcells-y hire that the Cowboys have made since Bill Parcells. Bill Parcells was this like, hey, I'm not gonna let you do that. I'm not gonna let you, you know, hire my dudes. Obviously, his grocery line is very famous. But whoever it is, if you want to hire, you know, Matt Patricia next year, like, let them do what they want, you know, like, let them.
I don't know if you want Matt Patricia to do what but I understand what you're trying to
like,
say.
Why sat Mike McCarthy again? Mike McCarthy.
I would love it, by the way, if the Cowboys hire Matt Patricia.
Yeah, me too.
For the record.
It would be wild. But
yeah, he would bring Joe Judge over with him. Yeah, let's
there
do
you
it.
Go.
Let's run
the
hits.
To the point, you know, Mike McCarthy built a Super Bowl winning offense. You hire him to be your head coach, but you don't let him pick his offensive coordinator. Why? Like, why? What? It's really dumb on the surface. But he has changed some things. And I think that's important. And Mike is so different from the Dallas Cowboys way. And Bob Sturm, who is great on The Ticket in Dallas and writes for The Athletic, he was the first person I heard notice this. You mentioned you watch a lot of Cowboys primetime games. I'm sure you've seen them run out the middle of their, you know, locker area onto the field through all the smoke and things like that. Mike, and they do different things now. And I'm not saying this is like, whoa, watch out, Mike McCarthy's amazing. But Mike McCarthy's first season, they didn't do that. They ran out through like a conventional tunnel. And the normal entrance into AT&T Stadium is through like a party. Like there are people tailgating. It's glitz and glamour, like smoke and mirrors and all sorts of stuff. And that's not the Mike McCarthy way. Mike's like, let's just play ball. And that's what I love about him. But it does conflict with so much of who the Dallas Cowboys are. And Jason Garrett allowed the Dallas Cowboys-ness to kind of lend itself to who they were in different ways as well.
When you talk about the Cowboys, it's just like this is what the Giants were for so long, where it's like you have an ownership group and they just hire people that they know and are comfortable with and sort of like yes men. But we saw this past offseason, John Mara and the Giants and Steve Tisch and that Giants ownership got away from that.
Good for them.
Yeah, they brought in Joe Shane, who it's early, it's still year one, but everything Ethan and I have heard, everything he's done so far, a lot of positive reviews. People we talk to just say, hey, man, this guy is, he knows talent. He knows how to build a roster. He's been a part of it. I think that guy exists in the Cowboys organization.
Yes, he does.
His name is Will McClay.
Yep.
I've wanted him for the Giants for like the last two GM cycles. Like I have always said, you just try to get an interview, right? And even if Jerry outbids you, that's fine, but at least try. Like the worst they'll say is no. Why do you think, like, doesn't Jerry Jones sit there and say, hey, all these organizations keep trying to interview this guy and I have to give him a raise. Maybe I should just let him take control as like the real general manager or team president or football operations, whatever. And let me see what he can do. Let me see him have control of the coaching staff and whatever happens, happens.
I mean, he's pretty involved. And to your point, he's gotten his job title has changed like 14 times because he's gotten pay raise after pay raise after pay raise when teams want to interview him. He just, you know, seems to like his situation and his setup. And, you know, a lot of people would feel the need to, you know, I think I would be upset, but he seems humble enough that he's like, I don't need this title. I don't need everyone, you know, tatting me as the GM. I do think and not to speak ill of Will McClay because I'm a huge fan, but he's somebody who, and this tends to happen, and I'm sure this happens with the Giants, but like only good things get attributed to Will McClay.
And I was just about to make that point where he's taking these titles and these pay raises, but he's still behind the scenes. Yeah, exactly. He can take credit for the good stuff, and the bad stuff always falls on Jerry.
Yeah, like I just mentioned at the beginning of this here, like their third round pick has been a healthy scratch the first two games of the season. But Will's in charge of the draft. Will's in charge of scouting. Will's amazing. And Jalen Tolbert could wind up being an amazing player for the Cowboys. And Will McClay has had a lot of hits, but there are no demerits on Will McClay's resume as far as any Dallas Cowboys fan is concerned. It's a lot of the conversation you guys have mentioned, right? Like Jerry, just do nothing. And I'm not saying Jerry deserves to like be pulling strings, but it's just a funny way that we kind of proposition things where it's like Mike McCarthy, you know, the offense sucks. Mike clearly sucks because he has nothing to do with the offense, but Mike is super terrible because the offense is really bad. The super amazing defense though, Mike has nothing to do with that. Like, you know what I mean? We're willing to give Mike all the blame for the off, and he's an offensive coach, but like you're willing to give him all the blame for that because he manages and oversees it, but you're willing to give him none of the credit for the defense that he manages and oversees. Like it's the same process. I mean, he's the same manager to Kellen Moore and Dan Quinn, but it's just, I don't want to say preconceived notions, but it's confirming priors in some way.
Yeah, confirmation bias.
Right.
Yeah.
So how is the Cowboys front office structure? Is it the Joneses information from everybody and then we'll decide? Or is it, hey, Will, you run the draft?
The way they make it seem, because obviously they're very well kept about it, is the draft belongs to Will McClay. The coaches are involved. You know, the coaches want certain picks. Taco Charlton was a Rod Marinelli pick, right? And sometimes coaches went out. And that happens across the NFL. But the Cowboys have, you know, they make it very murky. And they talk a lot. We're in the middle of the season. Jerry does two weekly radio hits on the home of the Cowboys. Steven has one of his own. And so that's Will McClay doesn't do any.
So that's wild.
They make sure, that they're talking all the time. And I mean, look, my job is to create content about this team, so like hell yeah, Jerry, like yeah,
no shortage of it.
Let's do this all the time, but you know who else has that going on? Just them. That's the way they rock.
Yeah,
let's talk about this Monday night game, right?
Yes.
We talked about the Cowboys for a little bit. We talked about this Monday night game. I look at the Cowboys right now, and what I see, obviously without Dak, they are going to obviously rely very heavily on their defense. And I think their defense might be the best defense in the NFL. I think, like I said, Micah Parsons, you know, unguardable guy. You look at their secondary. I think obviously Trayvon Diggs is there as well. Linebackers, Leighton Vander Esch, right? Is he like, are the linebackers a strength, not including Micah Parsons, or is it a weakness?
You know, it's,
because I think the better, strength is the defensive line, right?
Right. It's hard to, because it's hard to gauge, right? Because it's like they're not as good as the defensive line, but the defensive line is like elite. You know what I mean? Right. And so, and it's hard. I mean, you're saying not, you know, without Micah Parsons, they are without Micah a lot. Micah rushes the passer a lot. But Leighton Vander Esch has played well. It's his second contract year. Last year was the final year of his rookie deal. He re-signed on a one-year deal with the Cowboys this year. They brought in Anthony Barr. Both have started to pop as of late. And I mean, you know, Micah is the key, right? Like everything Micah does opens up opportunities and avenues for everybody else. But Leighton and Anthony Barr have really started to flash as of late. Leighton last year played every single game. That was really rare. He had played 19 games combined between 2019 and 2020. So he kind of rebounded. And so, you know, He I think they have the highest floor, honestly, of the three levels of the defense. And so that makes them really good. And so you've got them behind a defensive line that, you know, you yourself think is really great. And you've got Micah patrolling in the middle of all of that. I mean, it keeps them in games, right? I mean, we're two games in, but I mean, I don't know what's going on with the Bengals. Obviously, I think we're all a little bit kind of skittish on them, but it kept them in that game. I mean, we may be skittish, but they have an elite quarterback. They have an elite wide receiver, and they were able to get nothing done against this team. And a lot of that is because of that entire front seven.
Where does Micah Parsons tend to line up, against the left tackle or the right tackle?
Everywhere. I mean, like, it's everywhere. Truly, okay. I'm not trying to ride the fence. He is all over the place. He lined up at corner in week one. Like he is.
Wow. Okay. Well,
and he did it last year against the Giants at 1.2. I mean, he is everywhere. I mean, it's obviously rare that he lines up in the backfield, but he's rushed the passer more in the first two games of the season than he had early on last year. But they don't want to obviously have him rush the passer all the time, just because, I mean, it's exhausting, right? But he is going to rush the passer a lot this season. He's got four sacks. He's leading the NFL. And he's a big reason why I think they're going to win this game. I mean, with all due respect, Daniel Jones is one of the most turnover prone quarterbacks.
You don't need to say with all due respect.
Well, I mean,
Daniel Jones fucking garbage. Like that. It's like, you're not offending anyone here. Like
You're not offending me. You're actually offending me by telling me, hey, with all due respect.
Yeah.
They had six sacks last week. And so, I mean, if you tell me that they have four this week, I think that one of those is a turnover, right? They dominated the Bengals. I mean, like, again, an offense that we know can be elite, and they dominated them defensively without forcing any turnovers. I mean, you know, like, I think the Giants are way more likely to contribute into that department in some way, shape, or form because of Daniel Jones. And I think that that's the difference in this game. I think that those things are so hard to count on, but the Cowboys are so good at pulling them off in a really consistent way, which doesn't make sense, but that's just how good they are there.
Yeah, at least once a week.
Go ahead.
Well, Weiss, you said it last episode. At least once a week, Daniel Jones is going to throw the ball directly to a defender.
That is
whether or not that defender makes the play and the interception is a different story, but the opportunities are going to be there.
I think it's a fun game. It's a fun sort of entrance to the game, but I'd say like a quarter in, it's the same thing. You know what I mean? It's the Giants being outmatched by something elite. And I would say for the last 6 years, that's been Dak Prescott. And maybe for the like 100 years before that, it was Jason Witten, but now it's Michael Parsons.
The one thing I will say about the Giants is that I think their offensive line, especially their bookends, especially Andrew Thomas, they're a lot better than what they were in years past. I do think, like, and I can speak for Ethan, like, we have sat here and we have watched NFC East football, and you had Jason Peters in Philadelphia, you had Trent Williams in Washington, you had Tyron Smith in Dallas, and we're sitting here like, where is our franchise cornerstone left tackle?
Ereck Flowers.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what we've had to sit through. Yeah, I'm the best right tackle in the league, Bobby Hart.
Right. Yeah. Those days of Bobby Hart and Ereck Flowers are gone. Evan Neal, still coming into his own, not a complete liability in pass protection, but he's coming. And Andrew Thomas, I think, doesn't get the love he deserves. He's a really, really good, strong. I mean, I will call him an elite left tackle right now.
He's top three, I think.
Yeah, he's a really, really good player.
Even if he's not top three, like, even if it's top six, like, even if you're conservative about it, like, who cares? Like, you've got a top six dude. Yes. Like, life is so different for the Giants right now. I think they're such a dark horse for whatever Russell Wilson situation unfolds in the offseason. If Lamar wants out of Baltimore, I mean, like, this. I know it's hard. Giants fans have been extremely patient, but like, this is the year of actual patience. This is the final year before it starts coming together. That's an exciting time. And if you steal a game, like, you, I would argue they kind of have stolen the last two.
They stole.
I mean,
both.
Yeah. I mean, it's all like, who cares? Like, this is the year. Like, you know, this is your Friday before the weekend. Like, have a great time. Right. Enjoy it all.
But you know what? They stole it because of their coaching. Exactly. And that's why we can be thrilled about it. And not like Weiss and I both are like, hell yeah. Like, we're 2-0, but like, we're 2-0 because of something that we haven't had in so long. And it's not talent. It's since like prime Tom Coughlin, we haven't had a head coach that we can trust or a general manager that we can trust. And we've got both, and they're pulling out games because of the moves that Joe Shane's making and because of the moves that Brian Daboll's making. And I'm sure you've seen it, but it seems that every year, the last 4 years, the Giants are the ones losing on Jake Elliott 64-yard field goals.
We've lost to the Cowboys many times like that. Many times like that.
And now it's happening to the Giants. You know, the water is finding its level a little bit. So it's fun. It's nice. But at the same time, you don't have to say, with all due respect, Daniel Jones sucks. Yeah. We know Daniel Jones sucks. And that problem will rectify itself in a year or two.
There's a lot to be excited about. My sincere hope is that Saquon goes off for the rest of the year and that decides to extend him. That's what I'm really hoping for at this point.
The thing about Saquon is Carolina laid the blueprint out. I mean, in week one, they gave up the second most rushing yards, only behind the Titans in week one, who played the Giants. Was you stack the box and you don't give Saquon those big runs. I thought Saquon still had a good game. He got those big 5-6 yard gains, but he didn't have a statistical game. I think the Cowboys are going to do the same thing. And how dominant the Cowboy defensive line is, I don't think they would need to stack the box on every single play. I think they have the luxury because their defensive line is so strong and they got depth there, especially on the interior, that they can say, hey, okay, we'll just line up and thing. And Daniel Jones has not proven that he can win a game with his arm. It hasn't happened so far consistently. There have been games where he's had good statistical performances, but I'm talking about consistently. Hey, Daniel Jones, they're stacking the box. Saquon, you know, is not getting those big runs.
Make him pay.
It just hasn't happened. It was one drive against Carolina, just one, where you can say that was a good drive by Daniel Jones. The rest, I mean, it's just not there. I'm just being honest with you.
It doesn't matter. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter. You've discovered sugar-free ice cream, fat-free ice cream. Like, just enjoy it. Eat it all. Like, that's what this season is if you're a Giants fan. Enjoy the ride and root for chaos everywhere else. That's your role. And the Giants, if they can be a spoiler, like, that's it. Like, just be fun. Just, like, mess things up for people. Like, and I'm sad that the Giants are much better in that sense. But it at least makes this game a lot more fun. But I am taking the Cowboys. I'm sorry to say. I'm not sorry to say that at all. I'm very happy to take the Cowboys.
I do think the Giants win only because you got that emotional victory last week against Cincinnati. I think 0-2 Cowboys, desperate Cowboys, is a lot different than 1-1. Oh, shit, Cooper Rush, here we go.
Hey, this is a revenge game for Cooper. The Giants cut him, so watch out.
Yeah, they did. Who you got, Ethan?
This is tough, man.
Like, it is tough.
All week I was like, Giants, Giants, Giants. Especially because, I don't know if you saw the tweet that I put out, Weiss, but it was like a quote tweet to the Pro Football Focus guy who, like, Giants are the worst 2-0 team in recent memory. And it's like,
yeah, I saw that. I love it. Right, like, I would take it any day of the week.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm going to be happy
about
it.
Would rather be the worst 2-0 than the best 0-2 1,000 times.
Yeah, and also, like, I just don't, like, Panthers last year started 3-0. So, like, I don't know if that's true. They're definitely up there, but I'm all week I'm thinking, like, hell yeah, baby. Like, can you imagine, like, 3-0 and then you have to face the Chicago Bears? Like, oh my God, they start 4-0. I'm going to go with the Cowboys this week as the tiebreaker here. And I think
talked you into it.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, I mean, that defensive line just scares the shit out of me.
So. Yeah, it comes down to, like, who will make them, because these are two limited teams right now. And it's going to come down to, like, who's going to make a mistake. And I think the Giants are the more likely team to do that. But beyond that, I think they're more likely because of Micah Parsons. Like, I think he's the difference. I mean, that's just.
I think Wink Martindale knows how to deal with some of these inexperienced quarterbacks really, really well. He'll confuse the hell out of them. Even to Baker last week, I mean, he was obviously better than Cooper Rush. Really made it difficult for him. I think he can do that to Cooper Rush and the Cowboys offensive line. Not that same offensive line, in my opinion, that we saw in years past.
I agree. But you know what? It'll be awesome. We'll rewatch the Manning cast and the day after, and it'll be good. But I hope you guys sweep the Eagles this year. And
not happening, pal.
And I hope that both of your baseball teams are sad when it's all said and done.
Me?
Well, like, because the Mets are going to be in the World Series, but I want them to lose the World Series.
All right,
you know what I'm saying? So, like, yeah, like you're both going to have to be sad at one point.
I don't talk. I told this to one of my good friends who's also a Yankee fan. I don't want to talk about the Yankee season right now. The only thing that matters is ALCS against the Houston Astros.
It just has to happen. Like, we deserve it. Like, give it to us so we can watch that series. We need it as sports fans.
That's the only thing that matters to me. Cool. I mean, don't get me wrong. Aaron Judge. I mean, absolute monster. Definitely been following his home runs.
Future Met.
But we'll see. but to me, the ALCS is all that matters. But
that's well said.
Real quick, Cowboys-Giants rivalry. I've always said the Cowboys have helped sort of spring those Giants Super Bowl runs. That regular season game in 2011, I thought was one of the all-time best, you know, Eli Manning performances in the regular season when they won that game and the blocked field goal. But I want to ask you, Cowboys Giants rivalry, what are some of your favorite memories from the rivalry?
You know, I mentioned that when I was in high school, that was kind of the Romo. I'm 32 years old, and so the Romo Manning games were, I think, underrated. Like, we don't really give that rivalry a lot of love. It's probably been the best quarterback rivalry that the division has had in the 21st century. Like, you had some Prescott Wentz stuff for a little bit. I mean, the worst loss of my life was the 07 divisional round. There's, like, no doubt about that. That was super painful. And it was
when Brandon Jacobs threw the ball at the game clock.
Yeah, still... and like, I'm grateful that I wasn't in the line of work that I'm in now, because it would have been awful to deal with the Cancun stuff and everything, like from a, a like internet perspective. But the first game of that season was amazing. That 2007 opener was incredible. Again, there's so many great Cowboys Giants games. The 08 game at Texas Stadium, that was Sunday Night Football. Dallas was kind of on their last legs. The Giants obviously wound up being the one seed, but that was a huge win that the Cowboys had over them that, that kept them alive. And then they would go on to lose the final game at Texas Stadium, losing the first ever game at AT&T Stadium, what was then Cowboys Stadium, was really frustrating. And then in 2010, Romo getting hurt and lost for the season against the Giants. Yeah, I mean, like, I mean, 2011 was frustrating, obviously. The more frustrating regular season game was the first one, the one at AT&T Stadium, the Jason Pierre-Paul game. That was, and it, I've done a butterfly effect on this before, but if Miles Austin doesn't lose that ball in the lights, I mean, I don't know what happened.
He's still running.
But like, I mean, like, do the 49ers win the Super Bowl that year? Like, it does, you know, is like, what do we think of Alex Smith? Does Jim Harbaugh ever leave the NFL if he wins the Super Bowl with the 49ers in his first year? Like, what happens there? Does Brady win it in Indianapolis? Does Giselle ever make the comment about Wes Welker? Like, Miles Austin changes all that if he just catches that ball. 2012, the first game was amazing. When Dez's pinky was out of bounds. And that ever since then, it's really been kind of flat, honestly, since that 2012 game. 13 had the opener where Eli turned it over a billion times.
Yes.
14, I guess, was fun in New York, the Odell catch game, but that Dallas won. Shout out Tyron Smith. 15 had the season opener, which was a bad game.
That broke my heart, man.
It was an awful game that Romo had an amazing moment at the end with. But then the Dwayne Harris revenge when Dallas went to New York was fun. Yeah. The 16 games never upset me.
Matt Castle started that game, right?
Right. That was his first start, like that season. But the 16 opener didn't upset me. And then I really wasn't upset when they lost in New York on Sunday night. That was really annoying, though. Because it was Dak's second loss, and there was all this, right. Well, is it time to go back to Romo? And then ever since then, it's just been, it's been bad.
All,
I mean,
go ahead, say it. It's been all Dallas.
The most exciting things since 2017 has been the Black Cat at halftime, or whatever it was on Monday Night Football. So that was it. That was it. But I do think it was such a sign of how bad the Cowboys were in 2020. That their game in New York was moved out of the afternoon window to noon. That was a low moment for both teams. And to be fair to Dallas, they were injured and there was all that stuff. And I'm excited about this uniform matchup. I think the Giants whites are underrated. Cowboys going navy tops and silver bottoms. I don't know if y'all know this or not, but Dallas has a uniform combination where they wear their navy tops and their Color Rush white pants. That is something that Dez actually came up with for their road trip to New York. Yeah, in 17 was the time they debuted that. So
I'm a big uniform guy, so yeah, I do know those black, those navy tops with the white pants. But they Giants meet again. Giants Cowboys play again on Thanksgiving.
Time that happened, Cowboys won the Super Bowl. So
there you go. How long is Dak Prescott out? The only reason I asked that because you just mentioned Super Bowl, and I just wanted to.
I mentioned the Joneses radio hits.
Jerry made it seem he just cut his finger with a knife, and it's like, oh, he's going to put a Band-Aid on it. We'll be back next week.
I would guess it's either the Rams game or the Eagles game. And so if it's up to me, you know, hold him out. I mean, again, all due respect, but the Eagles are the threat here. You hold him out for that game. I would say you would hope that you can split these next two. Dallas is at home against the Commanders the Sunday after this game. And so if you can split these two, and then even if you lose to the Rams, you're 2-3 with a division win in hand, you get Dak back, go get a second one, get to 500. Like, it's not bad. You can make lemonade with that.
I'm not totally all in on the Eagles either, man. I keep telling people, let's see what happens with Prescott if he comes back.
No.
Crazy. The thing about the Cowboys is with Prescott, I think if he comes back and they're still in it, as the season goes on, I think they're going to get better as they sort of – deal with, okay, we're without Tyron Smith. We adjusted, you know, our receivers are getting better. Even Noah Brown emerging as a legitimate player, like he can contribute, finding a role. I think some of these young guys find a role. Their defense is going to be really good, I think, all year, barring any injury. So I think the Cowboys could be a very good second half team. I'm not just saying that for you, RJ. I do believe that.
I legitimately don't think the Eagles. And listen, anything can happen with the Cowboys with Dak healthy. I don't see a loss on the Eagles' schedule. That's how easy it is.
Kirk Cousins, they had three red zone opportunities and got 0 points. I mean,
you can make a lot of arguments. I mean, I believe in the Eagles too, but you can make an argument that they're peaking too early if you believe in that stuff. They do got to play the Cardinals and the Cowboys back to back. You know, this next 4 week stretch is a little interesting. They still have to play the Packers. I mean, you know, so do the Cowboys though, to be fair. And they have to play the Giants. You know, the Giants beat them last year, you know, so who knows? That could be two losses for the Eagles.
I agree. I'm not ready to crown the Eagles yet. Sorry.
I mean, they look very good. Today, the day we're recording this, it's hard to make a case that there's a better NFC team.
I'm very quarterback driven. I'm not all in on Jalen Hurts. I think right. I know what Dak can do.
I hope you're right. I mean, believe me. And there's a lot to this though, right? Like it's maybe what we've seen from Jalen Hurts is the exception. Maybe he returns. Maybe like he's Cinderella and the clock's about to hit midnight and he's about to be that pumpkin that he's been forever as far as a passer. Maybe Dak comes back and is amazing. Maybe Dak comes back and he still doesn't have any receivers and all the things that we talked about show up. Maybe the defense can't carry them for an entire season. Like there's so many questions. Maybe they lose every game. Maybe they win against the Bengals was just like good luck. You know what I mean? And they put Dak in too deep of a hole that he can't climb out of. Like there's a lot swirling.
Maybe the Giants keep winning these games. Who knows?
That's true. I mean, no, if the Giants win, like the Giants are going to be 3-1 at the worst. I can promise you that they're beating the Bears. And I love Matty Berthus, but the Giants are going to be 3-1. So they win this game. You're 4-0. You're 4-0. It's hard to miss the playoffs if you're 4-0.
And then you go to London with Green Bay. And then guess what? You got the Titans. So, or not the Titans, I'm sorry, the Texans. And it's like, well, now you're looking at, you know, you're looking at a pretty good record through six games. I don't know what that feels like, by the way. I forgot how these winning records are supposed to feel like. So
it will always feel scary if Daniel Jones is your quarterback. It will always.
Yeah.
Listen.
No, he won't be for much longer.
How many more days?
I'm excited that the division is back. Even Washington looks, you know, formidable. It's not fun when these games are boring and you know, whatever. Oh, so yeah. I really am excited. Obviously I hope the Cowboys have the most success though.
I miss being able to talk shit to people. Soon. I was talking shit to Ryan Tannehill and Mike Vrabel in week one, when we beat the Titans, like I need that NFC East, you know, that rivalry back. Hopefully we're close to it.
It's on the way.
Yeah.
Maybe if the Giants win, maybe I'll tweet you, RJ. How about that?
If you do, if they don't, if the Cowboys win, I'll tweet you. We'll make it, you know.
There you
like,
go.
That's the thing. Like, I got to say, like, and maybe it's because they haven't been good, like, in the last, like, 5-6 years, but, like, Giants Twitter isn't really a thing in my mind.
It's a thing.
But I've kicked the hornet's nest that is Eagles Twitter before. Like, I've pissed them off. Like, I've never really pissed off Giants fans. Like,
Here's why. The last 4 or 5 years, we've been so focused on the incompetence of the Giants. Where we didn't.
Well, Weiss, even... we've been fighting with each other. That's why. Yeah, like, we can't been, fight okay. our fan bases. We're
it's
at each other's
throats. It's been
yeah.
a civil war. It's been a civil war for the last 4 or 5 years within the Giants fan base.
Yeah, it's been pro Gettleman versus anti Gettleman. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm Thanos for the Giants fans. Like, you've been having this civil war. Now it's about, like, being the group together and, you know, defeating a better enemy in me. So
there we go.
But I got to say, I want this to be the last thing I say. I'm a huge fan of not giving Kenny Golladay what he wants. What are you talking about, Kenny Golladay? Like, you need to be playing more. Like, why? Like, I tweet this out all the time. Trayvon Diggs has caught more passes in the end zone at MetLife Stadium than Kenny Golladay has since signing with the Giants.
Here's the thing. Cowboys got salary cap space. They need another receiver.
I don't want anything to do with that.
Hey, come on. I know you.
I love that. That is a big win on Brian Daboll, that he's like, you have a big contract? Who cares? I don't care. Oh, like, that's we're playing the best guys. Brian Daboll, not coach of the year or anything, but the sun is coming up. It's coming up on the Giants.
It is. I do believe so.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap it up. RJ, thanks for coming on. Hopefully we can talk shit to you soon. Follow him on Twitter at RJ Ochoa, blogging the boys, and who knows, maybe we'll do another podcast for a Giants Cowboys game that still matters in the future.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, guys. I wish you and your audience and your followers health, wealth, and happiness. But like complete and total sports misery. Like just, especially on you know fair. On yeah. you know football and baseball. Because like, I'm imagining they both side with you. Are they all side with you too? But so yeah. But other than that, like seriously, I hope you find $100 on the floor. Hope your dinner is amazing. I hope you know you go out and have a great time.
Oh yeah.
I hope those shelves behind you collapse and everything I see there gets destroyed.
Thank you. That means a lot.
Yeah.
All right, hey, man. RJ, thanks, RJ. Appreciate it.
Y'all have a great day.